Yo, what's good? It's your boy B. Barnes. This is the 12th and final episode of the first season of the Gentleman's Guide podcast. It's been a long time coming. I'm happy to get here and I'm happy to move on to the second season, which I will announce at a later date. But today we're going to dive into the four-part limited series on Netflix entitled When They See Us with me and my wife, Miss Gab. And it's going to be a good talk, a good conversation. This was a emotional roller coaster. So let's get right into it. Gentlemen's Yo, we are back. Myself, B. Barnes, and...
Hey, y'all. It's Gab again.
She made it back for a second episode, and happy to have you back. She didn't know it, but I basically told her she's my co-host now.
Yeah, apparently that is my new role. So maybe you'll be hearing more from me going forward.
Yeah, so... Without further ado, we're going to dive into this Central Park. Well, excuse me. It's the actual term or the phrase or name at now is the Exonerated Five. But it's the four-part series that everybody's talking about, When They See Us, directed by Ava DuVernay. What were your initial thoughts? And I'm just talking specifically from the first episode, not the whole. And not its entirety.
Yeah, so the first episode was the hardest, one of the hardest episodes for me to watch. So I won't talk about all the episodes right now, but the first episode and the last episode were the hardest for me. And the first episode, it was just really difficult because they were so innocent, and it just shed light on how little black boys can't be. They can't just be carefree because they're seen as a threat.
And so we have a set of different rules that we have to live by and we have to be aware of.
And so it was just really hard to watch their innocence be stripped away at such a young age and treated like animals. Like they were referred to as animals and they were just little
kids. That's what got me the first episode. I was pretty much just, my forehead was wrinkled up the whole episode. I was mad. I was angry the whole time. And normally, and you know this, but normally when we choose to watch a Netflix series, a new Netflix series, we, if it's good, we typically watch at least 3 to 4 episodes
in the
first sitting, right?
Yeah.
After this first episode, y'all, we
looked at each other and we're like,
I said, yeah, we need to break from this. This is too much. My heart was racing. My brain was going all types of places.
Crying on the other side of the couch.
I remember when the cop was asking what was his name?
Was it Kevin?
Kevin, yeah, the trumpet player. And just so y'all know, I mean, our family knows this, but we got a little son. We have two sons, but our older son, Brandon Jr., he loves the trumpet. And Kevin, and you know, he played the trumpet in real life. So when the cop asked him, you know, about him playing the trumpet, I looked over and Gab was just like dripping water out of her eyes.
I couldn't help but imagine like if that was Brandon at that age, you know, he just wanted to play the trumpet.
Mm-hmm.
And then the part that really got me is when the police had taken Kevin in and his sister came to come get him and he was just sobbing. And
he was terrified. Yeah.
And saying like, I just want to come home. And I could just relate to that. So black boys are, society raises them to be like strong and hard and not show so much emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And any young black men that I've interacted with, you know, throughout my career, like they do whatever is necessary to keep that facade and to maintain their composure and like not show any emotion.
Yep.
And so to see him, a 14-year-old boy, sobbing and in tears and like terrified. Yeah. It broke my heart because I think of all the boys that I've worked with, and like anytime I've seen a boy cry, it just does something different to you than watching like anyone else cry. Like watching a young black man terrified is really heartbreaking for me. And the sister was just put into
a really bad position.
Yeah.
It's like, what do you do if you're that the loved one of that kid? It's like, you want to ease that pain. You want to ease that terror, whatever he was going through in that moment. I haven't been through this specifically, but I had my own run in with the law when I was, seventh grade, I was at 12, about 13 years old. And, it wasn't, it was night and day compared to what you watched on this documentary, but I can understand to a certain degree the sentiment of wanting to just go home. I spent, I want to say, a couple weeks in juvenile detention, and I can understand where they're coming from as far as just being away from your family. Know you didn't do anything wrong, but you know, all these people are saying one thing, but you know another. So it's a really difficult position for a family member to be in. And
she just wanted to make it stop. Like whatever was causing him pain, she just wanted to stop it. And like, I was thinking about my brother, like, and how, if that were me, like I would do insane things to stop whatever the hell it is.
Yeah.
That is hurting him like that. And so like, to think of her, like, of course she signed the papers.
Right.
Like, what else was she supposed to do? Just sit there and watch him suffer?
And the cops, the system, the way the system is built, and you got to be in, you got to be live on a rock to not understand that this has been going on for decades, for generations now. But that's what they bank on. They bank on you being hungry, you being sleepy, you being tired, mentally fatigued, away from your family to try to isolate them, and scared. And that's what they, that's what they bank on. So I want to dive into the, I believe you mentioned fairly recently about, what was it?
The parenting?
Not the parenting. We'll come back to it.
But,
go ahead.
But the thing that you might be referring to is there was a particular scene in the first episode when the boys had been taken in, but the parents didn't know yet. And I don't know whose mom it was, that was like calling around, and she was like,
well, you seen my baby?
Yeah, Miss So-and-so, have you seen Kevin or Antron or whoever's parent it was?
I think that was Yusuf's mom. I believe that was Yusuf's mom.
Maybe it was Yusuf's mom.
Yeah.
And she was like, if you tell him, can you tell that boy to bring his butt home?
Mm-hmm.
And I was just thinking of like the differences between black parenting and white parenting, and how a lot of times like black parents can be more strict and like, you're not going to disrespect me in my house and you're going to be home by this time. And like,
but understand where that came from. I mean, I know you understand. I'm talking about our listeners.
And go ahead.
No, I was going to say, that's what I was going to dive into, but the understand where that different style of parenting comes from, that traditional style of parenting, for our white counterparts versus, you know, people of color, is we live by a different set of rules. And if you disrespect your mama and your daddy in your house, how are you gonna respect a stranger telling you to put your hands up?
And it's not even that. It's just that the consequences for disrespect are different. So they have to be strict because it's literally life or death. Yep. If you do this outside of my house, it could be a life or death consequence. So I need you to learn it while you're inside the house. Whereas, you know, we joke a lot and there's hashtags about like, you know, white parents and letting their kids say whatever. And I know that's not all parents. But that is a stereotype. And I think that does come from
somewhere.
Like, the consequences to their disrespect are not life or death. So those parents don't have to be as strict because their kids live in a world where
it's two different worlds.
They're safe if they choose to be a kid.
Yeah.
Like, kids are naturally going to push you and test the limits, but black boys and black women as well, but very much black boys, because they're seen as a threat, don't get the privilege
the luxury
of being a kid and being disrespectful outside of the home because they very well could be killed for it or jailed for it for 20 years, like the Central Park Five.
Yeah, so it's really emotional. After the first episode, it cooled me down a little bit. But fast forwarding to that last episode, that's what I think what really hit people, when we saw what Corey Wise went through. That was really tough to watch. And just try to put yourself in his shoes. Like, yeah, we just watched, he was in prison, 14 years? 14, 15, over 10 years. He went through this for over a decade. And I don't get me wrong, I'm not calling anybody out. I'm not putting shade on anybody. But I saw so many posts on my social media, Facebook or Instagram, where people was like, I can't even get through this. It's like, you can get through it because Corey Wise went through this for 14, 15 years. It's like, you can, at the very least, you can sit,
listen to their story.
Exactly. It's like, I don't understand that logic. Like I said, I'm not hating or put shade on anybody.
I can understand the logic because when you think about it, when we watch the news, it's traumatizing. Every time you turn on the news, it's always like a black person or a person of color being killed or shot.
I'll take that back because I don't know if you remember this when I want to say this was around when Castro?
Castile.
In New York when he got choked and the whole I Can't Breathe movement started. It was a number.
We're getting them confused, which speaks to the tragedy of there are so many black men being freely killed on the street that we can't even.
Yeah. Yeah. My point is, I remember it was a specific time. This was probably a couple years ago. Before we even had the boys. And I want to say it was at least a week where I didn't feel right in my body, my soul, my emotionally, I was just like very irritable. I was kind of lashing out at you, not like disrespecting you, but I was very irritable. I had a short temper and I remember, I don't know what night it was, but it was a night we were both laying in the bed and I just like busted out crying. You remember that, right?
Yeah.
And everything that I saw, I was internalizing as a black man in America. I was internalizing and I didn't even know it. I busted out crying and I started spewing everything that I was feeling. I didn't know that I was feeling it while I was going through it. I know something wasn't right. I knew something wasn't right, but it all came out and I was just crying like a baby. She helped, like literally she was holding me in her arms. I was crying like a baby in the bed and I was just telling her how scared I was to go out in the world. Really, it's really scared. We were watching the When They See Us Now, the Oprah interview with the whole cast.
Yeah. And I highly recommend.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Who was it? Was it Antron's father? What's the guy's name? He plays Antron's father. I forgot his name.
Michael something?
I can't remember his name. Y'all know who I'm talking about. He played in Boardwalk Empire. He played in, what's the show in Baltimore?
Brandon, I do not know.
Oh, Gab don't watch TV.
He keeps looking at me, hoping that I'm going to feed him the answer, and I don't know.
Y'all know who I'm talking about. Anyway, I lost my train of thought. Now you done messed me up.
But you messed yourself up.
But yeah, we're gonna come back. We're gonna take a little break.
We're gonna collect his thoughts.
We'll get our thoughts together. We're gonna come back and finish this thing off right. All right. Michael K. Williams. That's who it was. Next time we're gonna have our facts straight. But played in The Wire. I don't know why I couldn't think of the name of the show, but everybody know him from The Wire. I know him from Boardwalk Empire. But he was talking about how he was growing up in New York during this case as a teenager. And he literally remembers changing the way he dressed because he didn't want to be singled out. He didn't want to be put into that same group of guys because apparently they looked a certain way, you know, to white folks, to be blunt. But
yeah, and it reminded me of, or not reminded me, it gets into respectability politics and how the system will put us against each other, and how, you know, if a black man dresses a certain way, he's either a thug or, you know, he's respectable, and dressing in a respectable way keeps you safe. And that's really not the case anymore. You're not safe as a black man in this country, regardless of if your pants sag or if you're in a suit and tie.
You can be a law-abiding citizen. You could have a very modest looking car. You can, you know, but clean cut.
Yeah, but it just, like, the purpose of it is to put us
against each other.
Against each other.
Divide and conquer, yeah.
Where it's the two groups of people within the same group making judgment calls against each other. And if we can do it to each other,
then they ain't got to sit then, back and just
yeah, then they don't have to worry about tearing us down. Yeah. So it was just sad to hear that, even though that is a very real strategy, you know, you don't want to be considered a threat. And so you dress in the most non-threatening way that you can. So it's very understandable, but we also have to think about, like, challenge our own perceptions and, like, why do we think this way?
Yeah.
Why am I judging this person for dressing a certain way?
Who taught you how to think this way?
Yeah.
Why, the system of white supremacy overall, it's ingrained in all of us in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And it's up to us to make a conscious decision to go against what we've seen and learned our whole lives.
And it's just sad to hear him think, even though he wasn't, you know, involved in the case as a child, but just knowing about it and knowing that, like, in that way, like, the Central Park Five's experience stripped the innocence away, not just from them, but from, like, everyone who was around during that time.
Yeah.
Like, his childhood was changed.
Yep.
Because of that tragedy.
Yeah.
And that injustice. And we see that all like, it still happens today. And that's what makes this case so sad, is, like, yes, they deserved to be exonerated a long time ago. They should have never even went to jail, but there's still thousands of men serving time for things that they did not do.
And as big and famous as this case was, at the end of the day, you got to understand the repercussions of a case like this can do to public perception. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of what's the movie where the Birth of a Nation, Birth of a Nation. And we all know the most recent one, or most of us know the most recent one that was redone, which I thought it was a pretty good movie. A lot of people called it another slave movie. That's beside the point. I'm talking about the original Birth of a Nation, which basically it showed black males, and it basically had white dudes in blackface. And they were showing and changing public perception as far as how black males were viewed. They were viewed as what they call super predators back in the day. And this stereotype has been perpetuated through media, through multiple generations. And this was just another example of, you know, the system, of the overall system, whether it be politics, media, internet, whatever you want to call it, the system perpetuating the stereotype that black males are inherently dangerous. We are inherently, you know, super predators. We're out to rape white women and, you know, just
go
for no reason.
Rampages.
Go on rampages and we're animals. It's like,
the language used in the documentary was just really hard to listen to because, yes, it happened several years ago, but people still refer to black people as, like, animalistic and predatory. And so it's just a really sad reflection of where we still are.
Yeah.
Like, I'm glad they were exonerated, but we still have so much work to do.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to backtrack too much, but on that fourth episode, watching everything Corey went through, which I know he went through
Man.
so much more than what was on what was in the documentary. If you haven't watched the Oprah special,
When They See Us Now,
I highly recommend it, because I am inspired by, I wish I could think of a word bigger than that, Corey's determination to maintain his innocence, because I could not have blamed him at all.
You better than me.
If he decided to just falsely admit to a crime he didn't do just to get out of the hell that he was in while in prison.
Bro, them two dudes raped him. I said, that would have happened one time. One time. He better than me. You don't remember that? Did you block that out?
Maybe I did.
Yeah. You don't remember that scene where the guard, they were all in like the common area watching TV. He let everybody out, but two dudes and Corey locked the gate and they took him back in the back and they did what they did to him. You don't remember that?
I remember that, but I didn't get the same.
That's what they did to him. Remember? And then later, remember, they were like, he was like, oh, yeah, they look hungry. That's what he was talking about.
I didn't read it that way, but
happened. I'm telling you, that's what happened.
I mean, I can't dispute it. But I really appreciated the other four, Kevin, Youssef, Antron, and Raymond.
Yep.
For making sure that Kevin's story was Corey's story. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Corey's story was told, because his is different, because he was considered an adult. So while they were in,
he was 15, but they, for some reason,
he was 16.
I thought he was actually 15, but he had an ID.
Youssef had.
Okay.
Youssef was pretending to be older to impress girls, but Corey was 16.
Okay.
Y'all, if I'm getting these facts wrong, please.
No, I think you're right. I think he was. I believe he was 16. I think I had.
But he was tried as an adult, and so he was really thrown in there, like thrown to the wolves as a kid with adults, and like the celebrity of the case, like all the attention the case brought, really came down on him when he was in prison, and he wasn't protected at all.
And two of the worst things you can go to prison for is rape and child molestation, and He got what real rapists would get in jail. That's all I'm saying. And it's really sad. And it was really hard to watch.
It was just the only thing that kept me watching without being completely defeated is that knowing that in the end they were exonerated. So I knew that there was, like, you know, a light at the end of this terrible dark tunnel. But it was very, after watching the whole series, I really recommend watching the Oprah series, because it paints.
Yeah, you get a better perspective
picture of what's actually happening with them and just kind of being able to see the real people and how they're doing afterwards.
Yeah, I believe the last thought that I have is, while we all know what happened with this case, whether we watch the documentary or not, there are so many more cases out there where guys are still serving time for things they did not do. And this definitely shines light on, like I said, the justice system, or the guy who played the one of the lawyers. He said he feels like it shouldn't be called the justice system anymore. It should be called something else. Or, you know, because there's no justice, you know. At least for black and brown people. But,
I don't know if we're closing or,
I mean, we can, or you can.
My final thought is, we really have to make sure that our kids know their rights and know that they are supported, because how they were able to manipulate these kids.
Yeah.
I think it might have been Kevin, where his grandmother was there, or his mother was there, and then the cops told him that his mother had left him, and he was there by himself.
And I remember turning to Brandon and being like, we have to make sure that the boys know that, like, I will not leave. If they tell you that I have left, they are lying to you.
Like, I will never leave you.
I will never leave you alone.
Even that aside, I would say, yes, everybody should know their rights. But that aside, like we said earlier, we live by a different set of rules. So your job, your duty is to make it home to your family. You know what I mean? So it's like, yeah, what he may be telling you to do may go against your rights, but a white man can react the same way you react. And he goes home scot-free, and you could end up in jail or either, you know, dead.
Well, so, yeah, you know, we have to teach our kids how to respond to police and authority, but God forbid they're taken in.
Yeah.
Like, they need to know their rights and know what supports they have, because I feel like, you know, those boys were being respectful and they still got taken in. So
Corey was just being a good friend.
Yeah. Your kids just need to know what's going to happen. I was very sad, because, like, I can just imagine Kevin was the one who really pulled on my heartstrings during this whole season, or this whole series, because, like, I could just imagine how alone he must have felt when they told him that his parent had left or his sister left or whoever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And what I got from it is, like, I want to make sure my kids know that, like, I will not leave you.
Mm-hmm.
They are lying to you, and that we're going to get you a lawyer, and like to ask for a lawyer, and you don't have to answer any questions, and don't sign anything.
Yep.
So just all of those things that the parents just didn't know. And it's not their fault. The system purposefully keeps that information.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's
away.
It's a never ending cycle.
It's
you marginalize a certain group of people, and, you know, the education system in a certain area or neighborhood doesn't get the same funding as another area. And, you know, let's say the parents generally are less educated, right? And then they tend to make less money, which means they're more dependent on working certain hours. So,
and then the kids go unsupervised, and then there's no funding in the neighborhoods to have programs that keep kids busy in a constructive way.
Right.
And all this stuff, all these systemic issues.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, very much recommend to watch the series and then follow it with the Oprah When They See Us Now.
Yeah. So if you have any questions, anything you want to add to this dialogue, to this conversation, shoot us an email. Shoot me an email at bbarnes@thegentlemansguide.info. A voice memo, an email, either one doesn't matter. But thanks for tuning in. This is the final episode, like I stated before, of the first season. Follow The Gentleman's Guide on Instagram, Gentleman's Guide 919. And I will keep you guys up to date on new episodes, new content, all things new about The Gentleman's Guide. Thanks for tuning in. This has been great.
All right. Thank you, guys. And I will talk to you next season.
Adios.